from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, support for Le Show comes from Warner Brothers Home Video. Warner Home Video, no brothers, announcing the DVD release of A Mighty Wind, directed by Christopher Guest. Hello from the road. This is the road. It's actually Washington, D.C., midway through the first stage of the Mighty Wind concert. Oh, I mentioned that name again. Concert tour. And, ladies and gentlemen, this is Washington, D.C. It's still our nation's capital, but you probably bust down through Pennsylvania on Friday, and we thought all week long, oh, man, watching the TV, this Isabel is going to be a humdinger. Speaking of which, by the way, of course, it turned out to be a rumor. I know some people. I know some people right here whence this broadcast is originating in Washington who are without electricity right now. I'll get to that in a moment. But have you noticed, did you watch the cable TV news coverage of Isabel? Now, I was limited to CNN in my hotel room, so I don't know what the other guys were doing. But on CNN now, it's reached a new low. Because on one day, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday, they had a couple of reporters out getting blown around by the wind and getting buffeted by the high wind and rain. And then on Thursday, they started a new phase of the coverage after Isabel. And because now all the live cameras are just seeing calm seas again. They show that on the left side of the screen. On the right side of the screen, they're showing repeated tapes of the guys getting buffeted 2 days ago. Like, that's a classic. We want to relive that. The nostalgia is getting more instant every day. Meanwhile, of course, Isabel has moved up to Canada. But don't worry. It had to certify that it had at least 40% Canadian air content before it was allowed to cross the border. And as I say, here in Washington, D.C., according to reports, thousands of people are without power. Now, consider the irony of that, if you will, ladies and gentlemen. City of Washington, D.C., where all they worship is power, and thousands of people are without power. It's as if there was a big storm that hit Southern California, and suddenly half the population of West Los Angeles was without screenplays. Hello, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Let me say, oh, Lord, to thank him.
I want to thank you.
Do you want to thank him?
I want to thank you.
I want to thank you.
I want to thank you.
All of my blessings.
I want to thank you.
You've been so good.
I want to thank you.
You've been so kind.
I want to thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
From your nation's capital, ladies and gentlemen, our nation's capital, who am I kidding? Ladies and gentlemen, from Washington, D.C., I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to another edition of Le Show. And a strange place to be doing news from outside the bubble, because this is where the bubble lives. But here we go. Former General Sultan Hashim Ahmad, Iraq's last defense minister under Saddam Hussein, surrendered to the American general in charge of the north of the country this week, after weeks of negotiation. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've been inveighing on this broadcast for months now, during the entire post-war period. Let's all share a chuckle at that, shall we? About the fact that all these guys are surrendering, supposedly, or being captured, and we never hear about the circumstances, either of the captures or the surrenders. It's a very murky area. It's as murky as Guantanamo by day. What's going on with these guys that they're coming in? But under what conditions? And is that really what the $87 billion is going for, is just to pay these guys to come in? Well, who knows? But Dawood Baghestani, who arranged the surrender to Major General David Petraeus, said that former General Sultan Hashim Ahmad was handed over with great respect and was with his family at the time. That's a nice handover. Honey, watch. I'm gonna turn myself in now to the nice general. Baghestani said the American military had promised to remove Ahmad's name from the list of the 55 most wanted. He's going to be de-decked. The first guy to actually be withdrawn from the deck of cards, is that right? It at least means he will not face indefinite confinement. That's a good thing. And Baghestani, who handed him over, said, "We trust the promise. The Americans, we're the good hands people." Special treatment for Ahmad could be an effort to defuse the guerrilla-style attacks. Many of the attackers are thought to be former soldiers in Saddam's army, seeing their former commander well treated by the Americans might encourage them to lay down their arms. So might freak Twinkies. Pakistani showed the Associated Press a letter to Ahmad from General Petraeus, commander of the 101st. He's a friend of Geraldo's, in which he promised to treat Ahmad with the utmost dignity and respect if he turned himself in. Hey, that's more dignity and respect than we get in show business. I'd turn myself in. The letter was dated August 28th, and Pakistani said the negotiations have been going on since then to convince Ahmad the Americans would keep their end of the bargain. His health is excellent, and he's in high spirits, the mediator told the news conference in Mosul. He kept saying he was a military man and did his job. An American military spokesman in Mosul refused to comment on the deal. A U.S. military official in Mosul, speaking on condition of anonymity, confirmed that the deal had gone down. The U.S. military spokesman's office in Baghdad couldn't comment because they've been without phone service for 2 days. Hey, that's that good progress we're talking about. The surrender had been planned earlier but was delayed because of what Pakistani termed security concerns. He did not elaborate. They needed some of Eminem's bodyguards to come over and preside. Sultan said he was hiding in Mosul and in areas around the city, the mediator said. He surrendered in his house. He will be kept in U.S. custody only long enough for American officials to question him thoroughly. Pack a few clothes, babe. He will not be subject to prosecution. He was number 27 in the deck. General Petraeus' letter sought to assure Ahmad he would not lose face. So it's not just the Asians. They need to be reassured about that, ladies and gentlemen. All those folks, I guess, east of Suez, they care about face. Anyway, that's as much as we know about the deal. A nice letter, being allowed to surrender at home with your loved ones around you. And the utmost respect and dignity. Probably get cable in his room. Also, probably not covered on most of your broadcasts, but from the El Paso Times, the U.S. Army revealed this week that all records and documents about the weapons that jammed during the ambush that led to the death of 9 Fort Bliss soldiers, this is the attack in which Private Jessica Lynch was injured, all the records, all the documents about the weapons that jammed were destroyed in the Iraqi attack, and there's no way to trace the weapons' histories. Responding to an El Paso Times request under the Freedom of Information Act. Do we still have that? Can we take care of that, please? I didn't know we still had that. Any official information about the weapons used by Fort Bliss's 507th Maintenance Company was lost on the supply truck taken into combat. An official report on the ambush said several weapons jammed or failed to operate properly during the firefight. We had that item in an earlier edition of News from Outside the Bubble. The disclosure that the records were lost shocked, bewildered, and further angered relatives of soldiers who were killed in the ambush. Captain Troy King stated he does not have any historical data on weapons involved in the enemy contact, says June Bass, Fort Bliss Freedom of Information officer. He lost his motor pool truck and all documentation. King's records, which were kept in the motor pool, were stored in his supply truck. That's good storage. The official report of the 507th, which is part of the 101st, this is why, as I say, I never joined the military. I couldn't keep the numbers straight, which was released by the Army back in July, suggested the malfunctions may have resulted from inadequate individual maintenance in a desert environment. Nancili Mata, the widow of one of the soldiers killed in the ambush, said she was... How many hours sleep am I not having today? Said she was shocked to learn that no duplicate records were kept on the weapons. They should have copies. It doesn't sound right, she said. They're blaming the soldiers for not keeping their weapons clean, but my husband knew better than that. He did everything right. Arlene Walters, mother of another deceased soldier in the attack, said her son was dedicated to his job and to details. He kept his guns as clean as can be, she said. He even talked to his dad about it. officials at the Department of Defense refused all questions, referring them to officials at Fort Bliss. Fort Bliss. No irony there, ladies and gentlemen. Jean Offutt, Fort Bliss spokeswoman, said that taking all data regarding a company's weapons into battle is standard practice. When we deployed, all our active duty soldiers had to take their documents with them because we mobilized a lot of reservists who lived in the emptied barracks, she said, so all of their personnel files as well as files on weapons were taken with them. Because personnel files were lost in the ambush and no duplicates exist, the 507th is now trying to recreate the information. Probably Fox News would help them with that. Don't they do this slow motion recreations they could do? So no copies of the documents. That's the modern army, ladies and gentlemen. That's your technology-based army. The army of the 21st century is here now. Now, a couple weeks ago, we revealed that somebody had sort of poached on an idea broaching on this broadcast about copywriting your life. Now, here comes Hans Blix stealing from an observation first made on this broadcast way back. Let's get in the memory machine way back in April. The premise being, I labeled it at the time, a nutty scenario. What if Saddam Hussein, I queried, what if Saddam Hussein had destroyed his weapons of mass destruction, scared the Americans, because they were scary, we were scary, after the during the first Gulf War. We got him shivering in his boots there a little bit. He destroyed his weapons, but it's in a bad neighborhood. He's got enemies all around him. So to keep them from picking his bones absolutely clean, he destroyed the records of the destruction of the weapons and said, yeah, I don't have them, but maybe I do. And I didn't keep duplicates. I'm like the army. Now comes former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Hans Blix, ladies and gentlemen, this week. He believes Iraq destroyed most of its weapons of mass destruction 10 years ago, but kept up the appearance that it had them to deter a military attack. I should be a UN arms inspector. I got all it takes. In an interview with an Australian radio station, Blix said it was unlikely U.S. and British teams now searching for WMDs in Iraq would find more than some documents of interest. I'm certainly more and more to the conclusion, Blix said, that Iraq has, as they maintained, destroyed all almost of what they had in the summer of 1991. The more time has passed, the more I think it's unlikely anything will be found. Blix said he thinks the U.S.-led coalition has backtracked on the issue. In the beginning, they talked about weapons concretely. Later on, they talked about weapons programs. Maybe they'll find some documents of interest, he allowed. Blix said Iraq might have tried to fool the United States into believing it had weapons over the years in order to deter attack. I mean, he says, you can put up a sign on your door, beware of the dog, without having a dog. I think we got a dog. I think we got our hands on a big dog. And, ladies and gentlemen, beginning a new candor initiative, they don't call it that. The New York Times calls it that. Or something like that. I'd call it something like that. President Bush this week contradicted his vice president. Vice President Cheney was on Meet the Press last week saying something about, we still don't know whether Saddam was connected to 9/11. Bush this week said, there's no evidence Saddam Hussein was involved in the terrorist attacks of 9/11. There's no question that Saddam Hussein had al-Qaeda ties, the president said. But he added, we have no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September 11th attacks. He was seconding Don Rumsfeld, who said he had not seen any evidence that Saddam was involved in the attacks. Yet, of course, you know, most Americans, for some reason, believe he did. For some reason. Like Tuesday on Nightline, Condoleezza Rice said one of the reasons we went to war was because he posed a threat in a region from which the 9/11 threat emerged. That's nice verbiage, Condi. That's nice, careful verbiage. Asked about the poll numbers that show most Americans think Saddam was connected to 9/11, she said, we have never claimed that Saddam Hussein had either direction or control of 9/11. So, no weapons of mass destruction, no connection with 9/11. There are other ways to sell this thing.
Saddam Hussein. He's a threat to no one except himself. When you've got nothing, you've got nothing to lose. And now it's time to lose it.
He humiliated my daddy. He's not gonna humiliate me.
ThreatCom Zero. This time, it's personal. Too personal. Because bad blood is better than none. Mind's Eye Productions presents ThreatCom Zero. In theaters of war everywhere. Now playing and playing and playing.
Hoje vem te coroar. Toca cada universo. Para sempre vai brilhar.
Yeah.
This is Le Show from Washington, D.C. I just came from Manhattan, ladies and gentlemen. There was a, you know, many cities have street fairs from time to time. There was one in the middle of Manhattan on 6th Avenue yesterday, except if you're listening in New York, in which case it was Saturday. I know, it's too confusing for words. And, you know, street fairs are usually, like, unique and cultural and local, and you find things you can't find anywhere else. This street fair had a different theme. It was all the guys, this theme wasn't proclaimed, but it certainly was perceived, all the guys who usually stand on street corners in Manhattan selling knockoff Prada. Here was your one opportunity this week to buy knockoff Prada from them in the middle of the street instead of on the corner. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry,
yes, I'm right here. And there's some good ones. Let's start with this. A former senior Mobil Oil executive was sentenced to 3 years and 10 months in prison this week after admitting he evaded taxes on more than $7 million he received for negotiating oil deals. J. Brian Williams apologized for the, quote, stupid mistakes I made before a judge in Manhattan. And the judge imposed the most lenient sentence permitted by federal sentencing guidelines. That's nice. He also ordered Williams to pay a $25,000 fine. IRS and FBI investigators built a case against Williams during a wider probe into the relationships between the country of Kazakhstan and U.S. executives as lucrative oil deals were negotiated during the 90s. That probe is continuing. Appearances on public school campuses have become rites of passage for candidates in the recall. For Green Party candidate Peter Camejo in California, the opportunity did not go as planned. The candidate was asked to leave the campus of Belmont High School, where he was scheduled to speak to a group of students. He was waiting in the school cafeteria for his speech to begin when Vivian Pittman, an assistant principal, asked whether there were members of the media in the audience. According to the Camejo campaign, the candidate refused to answer, saying it was his right to have media covering his campaign. Pittman asked students to leave the room, and Camejo was asked to end the meeting. School district officials said his ouster had been a mistake on the part of the school staff. Belmont High principal Ignacio Garcia called the campaign to apologize and invite Camejo to return to the campus. Officials of the campaign said they weren't sure whether he could schedule it. Other school apologies. A white high school administrator in Longview, Texas, who used the term Little Sambo while leading a teacher's workshop last month, was placed on paid leave for about a week before returning to Longview High School. Debbie Deck, director of career and technology education at Longview High, was leading an in-service session when the discussion turned to gaining respect from students. According to letters from two high school staff members, Debbie Deck said, "How can you stand up here and teach when you have a little Sambo sitting in the back of the room pulling up pictures of naked people?" Unquote. She was placed on leave August 13, returned about a week later. Deck wrote she didn't know that the term Sambo was negative and thought it meant nothing more than Joe or Susie or Sam. And she's a teacher, ladies and gentlemen. Debbie Deck. Do some Debbie Deck work at your house. What do you think? Of course, you know about this apology. Thank you for writing to JetBlue, so I have an opportunity to apologize to you personally and set the record straight. Most importantly, JetBlue has never supplied nor will supply customer information to the Transportation Security Administration or any government agency unless we are required to do so by law. However, I regret that more than a year ago, we responded to an exceptional request from the Department of Defense to assist their contractor, Torch Concepts, with a project involving military base security. This project had no connection with aviation security, and no data files were ever shared with the Department of Defense. We provided limited historical customer data, including names, addresses, and phone numbers. It did not include personal financial information, credit card information, or social security numbers. Torch further developed this information into a presentation without JetBlue's knowledge. We regret that this presentation included the personal information of one customer. Again, we had no knowledge of this presentation until 2 days ago and were deeply dismayed. The sole set of data in Torch's possession has been destroyed. No government agency has ever had access to it. This was a mistake on our part. I know you and many of our customers feel betrayed by it. We deeply regret that this happened and have taken steps to fix the situation and make sure it never happens again. I'm saddened we've shaken your faith in JetBlue, says the chief executive officer, David Neelman. The top advertising executive at America Online says the company is sorry for how it treated advertisers in the past. Sorry for the arrogance shown by its salespeople. Sorry for overpromising results and under-delivering. Lisa Brown, executive vice president of interactive marketing at AOL, offered her mea culpa during a presentation before an interactive advertising conference. Brown said the behavior of company executives caused AOL to lose the hearts and minds of advertisers and the support of the agencies. Nobody apologized for taking the name AOL off AOL Time Warner this week. Andrew Gilligan, the BBC journalist whose report accused No. 10 Downing Street, the British government, of sexing up the government's Iraqi arms document last September, this week apologized to the inquiry, the Hutton inquiry, for mistakes he'd made in his broadcast. He said it had been quite wrong to reveal another journalist's source in an email to a member of the Parliament committee that was investigating the situation. He said, "I can only apologize. I did not even know for sure that David Kelly was this other reporter's source. I was under an enormous amount of pressure at the time. I simply was not thinking straight, so I really want to apologize for that." He did not apologize, nor did he take back the sexing up allegation. So sexing up remains an item of interest. In the Monday sports section, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution inadvertently published an ad congratulating Dan Reeves on his 200th win as an NFL head coach. When the Atlanta Falcons placed this ad, it was with clear instruction that it should only run following a Falcons victory. Obviously, we made a mistake. We apologize to Coach Dan Reeves, the Atlanta Falcons, and Falcons fans everywhere. Finally, the Czech government forgot to include Malta and Cyprus at a Prague meeting for small European states to discuss amendments to the draft European Constitution. There was absolutely no political reason for leaving Malta out, said Yuri Slavik. Malta and the Czech Republic are like-minded countries, and there was no political reason for leaving your country out of the meeting. It was basically an oversight. Our minister has already apologized personally to the Maltese minister. So. Now, ladies and gentlemen, to California, where I'm not even in which I'm not even located this week. Here's how sad things are for Governor Gray Davis. He had to bring Al Gore in this week to lend a note of charisma. Getting osmotic charisma transplants from Al Gore. The debate this week may or may not come off. It's the debate where the candidates will be getting the questions in advance. It's the only debate that Arnold Schwarzenegger has said he'd participate in, by the way, calling it the Super Bowl. A couple of the other candidates have threatened to boycott the debate because candidates are getting the questions in advance. And to have a rump debate in the parking lot outside. Arnold says he'll still show up, but has put in one request. Could they also possibly give him the answers? General Wesley Clark sounds a little like Arnold so far. He, after a month of he announced he's running for president this week. No, he announced this week he's running for president, and immediately announced that he would have voted for the war resolution in the Senate last year, and then immediately thereafter announced that he wouldn't have. And then refused to answer questions on most other issues, saying he's having meetings on policy matters, which is what Arnold Schwarzenegger has been saying. Question. Why do you want to run for a political office if you don't have any policy positions that are ready to enunciate when you've announced you're running? Wouldn't that be the thing you'd do before? Anyway, General Wesley Clark scoring high in the polls already, but, you know, all those weeks when he was saying, we're going to achieve closure on this. We're going to achieve closure on this. You'd want to, if you're a general especially, it would seem to me, ladies, I just went away for a minute there. It would seem to me you'd want to run on a platform of, you know, man of decision as opposed to a man of closure. Anyway, The California Appeals Court, as you know, apropos of the recall, is going to be meeting, but 11 judges, to review the three-judge panel's decision to delay the recall because of those nasty punch cards. It's the last moment in the spotlight for Hanging Chad.
Here's a story they tell of one who fell from a stake that was almost raised. He took one punch, if even that much, and lost what looked like face. One punch went in, one punch went out, it hit everything he had. Destined was he to be known to the world as the one called Hanging Chad. The one called Hanging Chad. Is he still in the cards as he hit the floor? Is he going to count or count no more? His door could be swinging, he could be with child. Donato Dalrympled or dimpled and mild. His worth neither tittle nor tad. Hanging Chad. Hanging Chad. One night in November, we'll always remember, we started to know him so well. With nary a word, his voice was heard, like a little girl trapped in a well. One punch went in, one punch went out, and never was he the same. His only retort was, see you in court, Hanging Chad. Name. Hanging Chad was his name. Is he still in the cards? Has he hit the floor? Is he going to count or to count no more? His door could be swinging, he could be with child. Donato Dalrympled or dimpled and mild. His fate neither fancy nor fad. Hanging Chad. Hanging Chad. We all heard the news, he could only confuse, so powerful was his spell. When you saw him dangle, you could be excused for thinking you'd been sent to hell. One punch went in, one punch went out. Sometimes nothing moves. If cardboard was gold, he had riches untold. But Hanging Chad hid more than he proved. He hid more than he proved. Is he still in the cards, or is he hit the floor? Is he going to count, or to count no more? His door could be swinging, he could be with child. Don't Donato Dalrympled or dimpled and mild. Was he misunderstood or just bad? Hanging Chad. Hanging Chad. Wasn't a hangman, wasn't a judge. He was neither a king nor a cad. His only renown was staying in place, so they called him Hanging Chad.
Ladies and gentlemen, Canadian Transport Minister David Collinette says it's obscene that Montreal-based CN Rail has barred its employees from using the word Canadian in describing the company, formerly known as Canadian National. He's going to change that. He's responding to an internal company memo that says employees should no longer use the old company name. The official name of the company is Canadian National Railroad Company. Railway Company. This is a great Canadian institution, one of the best railways in North America. And we shouldn't apologize for being Canadian. The memo instructs employees to only use the name CN in the workplace, in telephone conversation, email, written correspondence, or in identifying themselves on their voicemail. Among the names listed to not say are Canadian National, Canadian National Railway, and Canadian National Railroad. These very simple things, said the memo, will go a long way to ensure a strong corporate identity and help build even greater value for the CN brand. Parliament leader blamed this on American management and ownership of the company. Company is run by Americans, for Americans. They don't like having Canadians in there because it's an embarrassment to them. Yeah, I'm always embarrassed by Canadians, ladies and gentlemen. Millions of viewers do not want digital television because they find it too laborious and demanding even to change channels, a British study says. The elderly and short-sighted find it hard coping with a complicated remote control and electronic program guide. The study by Generics, a technology and business consultant firm, said that unless people were used to personal computers, they might find multi-channel digital television intimidating. Just another bump in the road to the digital wonderland. Ratings for the CBS Evening News have been sinking. Some CBS rivals suggest the network was unable to take advantage of a potential large audience during the war with Iraq, when Dan Rather said they were doing some of their best work because the network often preempted the broadcast during March to cover the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Rather agrees. It may very well be true. I regretted that the basketball tournament came at the precise wrong moment for us. It was kind of a perfect storm. ABC and NBC widened their lead over Rather in the months that followed. Dan said he hopes to win back viewers with more investigative pieces. We know from the audience it's been one of our strengths, he said. CBS News executives have said there are no plans for a change in the anchor chair, and that's fine with him. I'm happy, he says. I'm happy every day doing this.
Good evening, Mr. Rather. Welcome back to Steak and Stuff. Well, thank you, Rudy. Is table 36 available tonight? I'm afraid not, but we...
Daniel! Brother Rather!
You know the gentleman, or should we have security? Brother Morton! That's fine, Rudy. I'll sit at 16.
Well, sir, it's been a while.
It has indeed, sir. Please, continue eating your, what is that, an amuse-bouche?
It's raw something in a juice of something else. My bouche is not amused.
Well, sir, what brings you up to Manhattan?
Same as your president and everyone else in the nation's capital. I'm escaping Isabel and seeing Hairspray.
And life at CNN is good, Brother Morton?
It's okay.
I imagine while you're up here, you can get your new business cards, the ones without AOL on them.
Oh, no, Daniel. No new cards. Can't afford it. We're supposed to cross out the AOL on the old cards.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And at the office building?
Well, on the ground floor, they're going to hire people to stand in front of the AOL. And up top, they're just hoping for clouds.
Sounds like my shop, Brother Morton. Tighter than an aphid's a-hole. Nothing that much is changing, is it?
Well, we don't have to use AOL's email anymore. I can't tell you, Daniel, how embarrassing it was to be sitting in a newsroom full of grown-ups and have that computer voice yammering you've got mail as if you're a 13-year-old girl hoping to hear from the cute boy in homeroom. But you must be in hog heaven this week, Brother Rather.
Oh, where's that, Bruce?
Well, as I recall, you sort of like hurricanes.
Like them. Cut my eye teeth on them, sir. Hurricanes were my journalistic mother's milk. Got me dry behind the ears. As you recall, sir, before a big wind hit Category 2, I'd have my slicker on and been lashed to a lamppost quicker than a heifer's bleat. But
what?
Oh, Brother Morton, storm chasing's a young man's game. That was okay for me to do when I was in my 50s and 60s, but now that I've passed the big 7-0, the most exertion the honchos at my shop want from this hoss is for me to get out of the anchor chair and stand during the broadcast.
You know, I noticed that.
Well, you know, Brother Brokaw stands, and his numbers are plow horse strong and pit bull persistent.
Does Brother Jennings stand?
Affirmative, and he's catching up with Thomas. They've got research.
Of course.
The audience thinks you look younger when you're standing.
Kids don't sit?
I don't rightly know, sir, but it does appear that this restaurant has fired all of its waiters. Excuse me? I would dearly love to see a menu, please.
Good to see New York hasn't changed.
No. But here's the way it looks to this hombre. If I have to stand on my head to get people to watch tough, two-fisted, shoe-leather-busting investigative journalism, sir, I'm going to do it with a smile.
Of course, if you're standing on your head, it'll look like a frown, won't it? But seriously, Daniel, we both know that battle's long lost. The people who are running both our shops now only want to cover one war. The war between Ben and J-Lo, whoever the hell they are.
You're dead rabbit wrong, sir, if I say so myself, and I'm going to have to because the waiter's on vacation. CBS News did the best damn job covering the Iraq War out there. The only problem is, nobody knew it was out there. Because of the damn hoops.
I'm sorry, Daniel. I haven't watched your broadcast all that closely. They have hoops on your set? That's the worst.
College basketball tournament, Brother Morton. Oh. NCAA. Mm-hmm. Talk about March Madness. We got preempted more often than a one-legged rooster. And that's what fueled our rating slide this year, sir. Book it, bet on it, box it, and batch it.
But weren't those games only on the weekends?
Thursdays and Fridays, too, sir.
So, no preemptions the rest of the week?
No, sir, but that's like saying, hey, we played three quarters of the game, we can take the fourth quarter off.
Mm-hmm. Basketball analogy.
Football.
The other networks have sports, don't they?
Not during that war. Pro basketball was mainly cable. I guess ABC put on some hockey games late at night when only the possums and crickets were watching. But
you guys still have the NFL.
Yes, sir. If the war had been fought this fall, our Sunday news might have taken a hit, but it's the weekday broadcasts that are this organization's heart and soul. That's headless critter obvious. No, sorry to spoil your appetite this, Brother Morton, but you know, first it's tennis, then it's college basketball. Mm-hmm. It seems as though if Ed Murrow were alive today, the fearless leaders we have now would be preempting him for ladies wrestling. And let me make this Brazos County water clear. I don't exclude myself for blame in all this.
Well, you didn't decide to delay or preempt your war coverage, Daniel.
No, sir. But all during it, I was sitting. That's all right. I'm not hungry. Brother Morton, you enjoy yourself in our fair sitting.
Well, thanks, Daniel. And look, Brother Rather, you know, if it's bugging you so much, maybe it's time to give the anchor chair, or I guess the anchor spot on the floor, to somebody else.
Bruce,
mm-hmm.
Mark this and mark it well, please. Uncle Walter let me force him out. I'm not about to make the same mistake. You can take that to the bank and get scenic checks printed on it. You take care, sir.
All right, Brother Rather.
Ladies and gentlemen, support for the show comes from Warner Brothers. I did it again. Warner Home Video, announcing the DVD release of A Mighty Wind, directed by Christopher Guest. Obviously, that's the end of this particular edition of the show. I'm going to go get some sleep. No, I'm not. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, across North America on Sirius Satellite Radio, and around the world via the internet at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it would be just like having the recall election in October and in March if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show playlists frequently appear at harryshearer.com. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. My thanks to Joe and Lila at HRN in Washington for helping to make today's Le Show be today's Le Show. Le Show can... Take two. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions that originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.